Hello and welcome back to the Dominant Paradigm, an American Gods podcast. We are your hosts,
Dwayne D.
Andrew Cersini.
And Tosin Unifawakin.
We just watched the first episode of the second season of Starz American Gods, titled House on the Rock. We assume that you have done so as well, so therefore our talk is going to be total spoilers. So with that in mind, let's dive right into the after talk. But before we do, let's catch you up on how to reach us. Here are our online links. You can follow us on Twitter at Gods Podcast or just hashtag The Dominant Paradigm. Our Facebook page is Podcast American Gods. You could write or send us a voice memo at starsamericangodspod@gmail.com. And you can always check us out on Geeks of Doom, which is where this podcast is hosted. If you do that, please add us on iTunes, like us, and leave a review. That's how we get noticed. All right, so before we get into the after talk of House on the Rock, Dwayne, why don't you give us a brief recap of what we saw this episode?
All right, here we go. We open on a Blackbriar golf course in Virginia, where a man teeing off is mowed down by technical boy driving his limo recklessly. The car stops and Mr. World stumbles out of the back in some sort of bunker, his face phasing in and out as he seeks refuge and help from some unknown friend. World and technical boy scheme on how to take down Mr. Wednesday. Their problem is that they're missing media. We jump to a map showing Wednesday, Mad Sweeney, Laura, and Shadow driving from Kentucky through Illinois to Wisconsin, where they stop at the House on the Rock. We learn a bit about the House on the Rock, a monument of curiosities at the center of godly energy. Belquist meets the djinn there, ready for a meeting of the gods. Belquist lets it be known that she wasn't invited, and Salim, the djinn's old paramour, shows up, having tracked down the djinn while following his heart. Now, Mr. World uses the resources of the government in the form of something called the Eyes of Argus. He claims that he's behind such cultural touchstones as Operation Paperclip, Moon Landing, Roswell, and the Compton Crack Wars. At Motel America, we're introduced to a South Asian woman on the staff cleaning up. We jump to Shadow, Wednesday, Laura, and Mad Sweeney at a gate where Anansi meets them. They head to the aforementioned meeting, which is to take place on a carousel, which requires a coin. Wednesday decides to allow Bilquist to join, giving her a coin, but denies Mad Sweeney and Laura entry. The carousel proves to be a portal from the normal world to the world where we see the gods in their true form, resplendent and immortal. It's called Backstage. We see Chernabog, Zaria Bolichnaya, Bilquist, Mama G in the form of Kali, the Hindu goddess of war, and other gods. Anansi tells a story, kind of does an opener. Wednesday then makes his pitch that they should fight the new gods together or else face oblivion. Kali says the best plan is to wait, while Bilka says that they should work with the new gods to reach their worshippers and expand their worship aspects. Shadow is at the meeting, even though he's not a god, and he appeals to them, saying that they should take the chance to prove to their followers that they as gods are worthy of belief. Later, we find Wednesday, Laura, Shadow, and all of the old gods at a party in the Motel America, where Bilquist spies on them for the new gods as Wednesday tries to convince the old gods to join his side. Mr. World sends a message to Mr. Town, who uses a sniper rifle, or who contacts Vulcan to use a sniper rifle to kill many of the gods, wounding Laura and killing Zaria Bolichnaya. Shadow goes out and stops the mass shooting. He's kidnapped, kind of like an alien UFO kind of beam thing. And nobody really knows he's gone except for Laura, who has the ability to see Shadow as a homing beacon, kind of, no matter where he is. And that's the recap.
All right. So there are some salient points about this episode. I'm going to start off with you, Tosin. Why is this episode called The House on the Rock?
So this episode's called The House on the Rock because it's actually based on a tourist attraction that exists and was a meeting place for the gods in the book as well as in the series. And one of the things that's really interesting about the place is the story around how the house was actually founded. So there's claims that that an individual named Alex Jordan Jr., who was a huge fan of Frank Lloyd Wright, who's a sort of famous architect, drove with an individual, Sid Boyum, mm-hmm. to a location nearby to show him Frank Lloyd the Villa Maria in Madison that he was working on. He really worshipped this architect, but Frank Lloyd told Jordan, quote, "I wouldn't hire you to design a cheese crate or a chicken coop. You're not capable." And the story goes on to say that as he was fuming on his drive back, Jordan pointed to Boyum of a spiral of rock and told him, "Hey, I'm going to put up a Japanese house on one of those pinnacle rocks and advertise it." And that is part of the story of the founding. However, a lot of that information has been sort of questioned as whether or not it's legitimate.
I
want to. That makes a lot of sense, though, because it's like, gods, myths, legends. Like the kind of apocrypha you just mentioned is the kind of thing that kind of goes with a sort of house on the rock kind of legend kind of thing. So that it kind of makes sense that it's not true told history necessarily.
Yeah, I have some more stuff about the House on the Rock that I like to talk about, but I'm going to save it for our big picture segment. But I wanted to mention that in the beginning of the episode, Mr. World is driven to Blackbriar, which is this secret underground bunker that the guy who is the administrator of Blackbriar says is only for the president's access. And then the Mr. World has some pretty snarky things to say about the president being basically a fake, and that he's the one that really runs things around. And I wanted to mention that Blackbriar is based on an actual place called Greenbrier, which was the home of a Project Greek Island, which is a covert place in the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia that was meant to hold government officials in the event of an emergency and hold them and keep them there, this bunker to keep them there for, you know, until whatever said government emergency catastrophe.
Oh, like in case the Russians like bombed us?
Something like that, yeah.
Right, and so basically that's what Denver is now.
Yeah, I guess.
If you're ever thinking about, if you ever take a walk through the Denver airport, they play very deeply into that conspiracy theory that under the Denver airport are all the bunkers to house the government when the nuclear war happens.
So there is a little bit of truth to the idea of Blackbriar that we saw in this episode.
Clever. It's clever.
So what did you guys think of this episode?
In general, like this is first episode back, second season, and I feel like overall that we are on a better track than we were last season towards staying on target for the book. I feel like it doesn't necessarily make a difference though, because this is a mini series. It's a series, so it's a whole different territory, and we should consider it as such. But I think that it feels like Neil Gaiman had a little bit closer of a hand in this season so far than he had with first season. They seem to be moving a little bit closer on target. I still feel like there are still some things that needed to be shored up, and I still feel like, although this season, I think that Shadow Moon, the actor that plays Shadow Moon, Ricky Whittle, yeah, I think he's done a better job this season. I still feel like overall he was the weak acting link in amongst the ensemble cast.
Right, so his character, like we said last time, it's a cipher, right? It's a stand-in for you to understand the world. So the fact that he has to bring characterization to somebody who is kind of like, yeah, okay, is a hard job, and I think the writers need to do a bit more with Gaiman there. That's one of the big switches. Brian Fuller is no longer running it. Gaiman is the author of the book is heavily involved with Gaiman there. He's internalized this character over almost 20 years, so you can see how he'd be able to help bring that out of Ricky Whittle. But I will say that from what I saw, I guess I enjoyed it. I wanted a little bit more of backstage. You know, in the book, backstage is sort of it's not super well described. And I was hoping that the visuals of a TV format would be able to get us some more stuff there. But The House on the Rock was beautifully shot. It's a real place, and it was shot in a way that made it look even more magical than it already is. Seeing all the gods together was interesting. The mass shooting aspect that they brought in was kind of like, wow. So I'm sad to lose Cloris Leachman. I get it. She's like probably like, hey, guys, I'm retired, really. So if you're going to kill somebody off, it's okay with me. But at the same time,
but
it
was sad
to see her go.
Also, I mean, yes, I know that we saw her, you know, get shot. But she's a god, so, I mean, who knows? And this is a mystical sort of...
Yeah, no, you're right, you're right. True. It's just, it was sad because she kind of had that... She gave us some closure, you know, final word action going on. We'll talk about it a little bit later. So it just felt, you know, it felt a little bit like this is it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's closure because they even said... Because someone else brought up the fact that, like, oh, she's good, she'll come back. And like, but no one believes in her anymore. And so I don't know that she's – I think she might be gone for good, to be honest.
Right.
But for me, this episode, I don't know that it was the strongest. I was kind of hoping for a little bit more. But I definitely agree the cinematography was excellent. And you know, I'm interested to see where they go next. I'm just very curious because I think they're going to have to divert a lot, or it feels as though they'll have to divert a lot to continue the story for as many episodes as we know are coming.
Right. I do think that Ian McShane felt like it looked like he was having fun, and that's always good to see. Same with Orlando Jones, who plays a Nancy. Ian McShane being Mr. Wednesday, by the way. Ricky Whittle looked like he had gas a little bit, so that's a problem. But I feel like the big thing was I still – like, you know how there are characters that you love to hate? I don't even have that for Technical Boy. I just – he doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I kept thinking, like – yeah, I watched it a couple times, and I was just like – at first, I was like, was this the same actor in season one? It took me a little bit to make that connection. And I was just like, this just doesn't feel right.
So that was a thing. I don't know that I – one thing that the show does that I definitely don't need to see is that whole thing where Mr. World or some of the new gods, their face gets like jittery or like CGI a bit when they're like in pain. Like that is a weird skin crawling unnecessary visual, right?
But
like,
effective,
I just don't need to
right?
See that.
It.
I mean, it doesn't help me. It makes me want to turn it off. Is the thing. So I don't want to turn it off. I want to keep on watching. So they don't need to do that. They just need to. I mean, I don't know. Use like TV snow or something. Right? Go Max Headroom. I don't know. They just don't need to make the faces go all on my. But otherwise, I thought people did pretty well. But we were talking about Leachman and gods dying. One of the things that was salient to me was that while gods are supposed to be immortal, you do see Zariah die. She's died by a bullet, right? You know, it might be a magical bullet because it's Vulcan shooting it, but she seems scared to die. Like it was the end. And she was saying, I do not wish to say goodbye, which meant that despite the fact that she might not have followers, despite all that, you know, she's gone through, despite the fact that she was living not like a princess like she thought she should, but she had grown old and she was, you know, basically living in like a subsidized apartment in Chicago, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't a glamorous life. She still didn't want to leave. She still hadn't seen everything she wanted to see or whatever. And that to me was sad. And so her dying in McShane's arm, especially with the kind of like, it wasn't quite romance, but it was, it was something between, you know, it was kind of like a Lady Gaga slash Bradley Cooper thing going on between the two of them. And
I just want to stay. I just want to take a look at. Yeah, right. Interesting. That's an interesting perspective. I think there was, but we saw that a little bit of that last season as well. That sort of that connection between the two of them, and it's fun to see. It's, you know, I think they had a nice chemistry together, and it's sad to see her go. But who knows? I mean, it's time to move on, right? Bigger and not bigger and better, but like. Say goodbye to old friends and say hello to new.
Right. Now the whole like shooting was an interesting take on the culture, right? So the show tries to talk about America. One thing that you can add to the show that wasn't really in the books, in the book, was this whole American Guns thing, which Vulcan's all about, right?
Right. Which was a new character to the series.
Right. So he's a new character to the series. Obviously, the mass shooting was a reference to the mass shootings that happened here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that the so-called mass shooting event involves something like three deaths. So if you talk to the FBI stat, you look at the FBI stats or whatever, three deaths in one incident makes for a mass shooting. Mm-hmm. And there were three bullet holes in the window. So it's just there, right? And then one thing that got me was, you know, Wednesday is just standing there. And the bullets are flying.
Right.
Everyone's down on the ground. He looks like he's just like, what's going on?
Yeah.
He looked like Grimace from McDonald's in his big coat. Just like, what's going on? And like, there's like glass flying everywhere. Another thing that got me is like, why does Laura get up? So Ricky Whittle's shadow gets her on the ground. Mm-hmm. And we know Laura is basically like death becomes her, right? Like she's not healing anymore. She's actually quite dead. So when something breaks a bone, that's it. It's not coming back. So even though she's strong as all hell, she has to realize that, you know, even when she's fighting, she can break parts of her body because she's just so strong, right? And it's not really tied together very well. It's tied together through, like, magic and not, like, sinew and bone and all that stuff.
Right.
So she gets up and this, you know, slug goes right through her shoulder. And so now she's got a hole in her. Mm-hmm. Forever. So it's kind of like, why does she get up, right?
Is it possible for her to get repaired, though?
Yeah,
we've seen her get repaired.
It's kind of external.
Yeah.
So they tell her with her arm, like, be careful with it. You know, it's meant to look the whole thing. I do like how she's decaying, like, her eyes are getting glassed over, you know?
Right.
Yeah. She's got some sort of, like, translucent, contact lens in there. So there's that in there. They're doing different stuff with the makeup. So it's almost like rather than, I mean, I'm sure there's makeup on her, but, you know, they're like kind of like, hey, let's put some like lines over here. Let's do some of this and let's make her paler. And she, you know, the actress who plays her is an attractive person, as most people on TV are, but they're doing a very good job of making her look like yucky.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Emily Browning, who was the original Violet Baudelaire from, Lemony Snicket's series of unfortunate events.
Mm. Yeah, so she just looks like, ew. Like she looks like she's cold, clammy, and smells, which is perfect.
right. they do definitely do a good sort of decay makeup effect on her. I'm buying it. All right, so that is our salient points for this episode. We've got some big picture things, which is basically how these events in this particular episode impact what we know about the overarching story arc. Tosin, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, so in this episode, let's talk about some of the supernatural characters we meet.
Yeah.
One of them is Mama G. And she's revealed as Kali backstage, another name for Odin. Mm-hmm. She is, you know, the goddess of war. And but really, when we see her, she's actually the destroyer of evil forces. So you see that it depicted with like four arms And historically, she's Mahavidya, which is one of the 10 gods that combines Shakta, Hindu goddess, with Buddhist goddesses. So she is a pretty powerful powerful individual, or yeah, has been of, in her
kind of
own
badass.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting that she's like, as a, so she says like, as a god of war, let me talk to you because you're a god of war too, because Odin is one of the gods of war. But when you look into her mythology, she's like, she's kind of like a god with like propaganda behind her, because she fights evil forces. So depending on where you stand, right, the other guy is evil. So that was interesting. But I like the fact that she was sort of like, you know, I'm a war god, but we don't need to fight here. This is, let's just do what we've always done, which is just kind of hang back, you know?
Yeah, she wants to really be a survivor here, right? She's kind of trying to live on. Yeah. Without necessarily being without necessarily starting the fight. And she remarks like, hey, you guys have actually brought the fight to her. But the interesting thing is, like, she's so powerful, but in their depiction, she's very modest, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's mm-hmm. kind of like, I think that's a great way of, like, powerful, truly powerful people don't need to
show it off all the time, right?
Yeah, she's just a waitress.
Right, she's a waitress. She's a, I guess she's also a, what's it called? Like, kind of like she did the housekeeping a little bit, whatever.
But did you see the look on her face when they shot
Zariah?
Like, she's like, she's out for blood. Like, you could see the yeah. rage. Like, this is like, the look is like, this is on now. You right. know, so I have a feeling in future episodes we're going to see her really kick ass,
which is cool because you know, like, Hinduism isn't like, it's not quite like Christianity, right? It's from 1750 BCE, right? So it's an old religion, yeah. which means she's an old god, and when you think about gods, like, I kind of feel like older is like strength of ages kind of thing, you know what I mean? So she's been around long enough to know when to fight, when not to fight, mm-hmm. which is what generals do. And she's also clearly got the power. I mean, when you look at a traditional picture of her, she's holding somebody's head. Yeah. Like, she's badass. So I'm interested in seeing what her role will be in this space. But, you know, Chernobog's got his hammer and he's out yeah. for blood. You've got Mama G out for blood. I think the Jin can probably hold his own. So, like, when I look at Mr. World, he's pretty bureaucratic, right? He's like, I'm going to get this guy to shoot that guy or whatever. Vulcan has his gun, but whoever was shooting, whether it was Vulcan or Mr. Town, Shadow disabled them pretty quickly. So I feel like the old gods have a bit of a there's a bit of a, you know, when it comes to just like straight up battles, there's a bit yeah. of an action. Now, the new gods are more sophisticated, and so there's that, you know?
Yeah, Shadow disabled him just right before he got sucked up into, you know, whatever.
UFO beam of...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, ass probe UFO beam, yeah. All right, what's next on the big picture?
So I wanted to mention that we were talking about the House on the Rock before. So the concept in this episode that we were given, that the House on the Rock, which is a roadside attraction, is analogous to America's version of a holy place where powerful gods commune. Like, that concept is directly from the book, from Neil Gaiman's book, and I feel like that little kernel of a concept, that roadside attractions are America's holy places, that is the central thesis of the book American Gods. So,
right, because it is a driving book. Like, yeah. it's a road trip kind of book. So I like the fact that they use the map to depict that they were leaving Kentucky where they had met Easter and they went up there and everything like that. But yeah, I think it's a central piece of the book. So starting off season two with that was mm-hmm. pretty powerful.
Absolutely. And I feel like we're going to continue to see that brought back as we've seen it occasionally on in season one. So it's nice to have that like spelled out and laid out for us in season two. We also get a glimpse of Argus. That's the surveillance system that Mr. World used, but in mythology, Argus was a servant of the goddess Hera. He had many eyes and saw everything, which is how Hera knew where to exact her vengeance on Zeus, his mistress, and his bastards.
Yeah, Zeus has a ton of mistresses. He's like, Zeus would like, you know, he's Hera's husband, so let's put that out there. Hera is like the goddess of maternity and other things. Zeus would roll out and he'd be like in random forms. He'd turn himself into a swan and like impregnate somebody. That's just crazy. And so Hera, because she couldn't take down the king of the gods, she didn't have the power, she'd exact her vengeance on the mistresses. She'd exact her vengeance on the bastards. And that's why Hercules had to go through all his like heroic feats, because Hera was basically attacking him the whole time. That's what those feats were, his defense of her attacks. So I think it's important to recognize that Hera doesn't do this on her own. She's got the giant with 100 eyes, Argus, to help her see everything, right? He's the opposite of Cyclops with the one eye. So that's one of the interesting things about this. So in some level, there's an abstraction of Argus that Mr. World is using. And the reason why that's a big deal is because, I mean, he says, like, no, like, don't ever tell anybody that I said this, but sometimes the old ways are the better. He's using an old god to kill old gods, even though he considers himself a new god and above all that. So I thought that was pretty cool, too.
Yeah. Dwayne, what can you tell us about this segment that we saw this week where they go in the carousel and go backstage? What can you tell us about the backstage portion of, which again is right out of the book?
Right. So like you said, it's right out of the book. It's a little abstract, right? Mr. Wednesday mentioned that they were in a place called backstage when we saw all the gods in the sort of native form, you know, fire coming out of their eyes, things like that. If we want to take a look at it, let's look at the creator Neil Gaiman's words from the book to figure out exactly how they see it. Where are we, says Shadow. Behind the scenes, says Wednesday. Sorry. Think of it as being behind the scenes, like in a theater or something. I just pulled us out of the audience, and now we're walking about backstage. It's a shortcut. And that's Shadow talking to Wednesday in Chapter 12 of American Gods. So it's a place where regular people can't go normally. Mm-hmm. Even though Shadow is seen to be regular, it's a place where the gods kind of hang out, the mystical people hang out. It's that, you know, when like you think God is watching you, like where is he watching you from? Backstage is the way I think of it. But in the book, they take the concept farther. I don't want to say how they take the concept farther because it might spoil the show a little bit. Right. But they take the concept farther. And I think introducing it in this way is good. And it's this kind of a way of showing that there are, you know, these gods are literal gods walking the streets with us. But they still have their kind of mystical places only they can go, which I think gives credence to the idea that they're gods, right? And you get to see them as they were visualized, imagined, worshipped, you know, back in the day. That was pretty, pretty powerful. So, I think the backstage thing, we'll see how they do it. But again, it's Neil Gaiman's influence, you know, working it.
You don't think this is the last time we'll see backstage?
I hope not.
Yeah, I think
Whiskey
it'll
Jack.
Come
they
back.
Mentioned Whiskey Jack.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
It's all timey-wimey anyway.
Wibbly-wobbly, baby. Where's Tom? Tom Cheridar is one of our Geeks of Doom colleagues, and he's actually at South by Southwest where there is an American Gods exhibit. And so next week, I think, he's going to come on and talk about that just a little bit.
Nice.
So another big picture is media. We know that the actress Gillian Anderson, the British-American actress, left the show prior to this season. And not only is she sort of missing from there, she's also, as a character, missing from this show. So being one of the most powerful characters that we saw in season one, and also one of the more powerful characters in Mr. World's crew, I'm not quite sure what they're going to do here. Right now they acknowledge it, but I'm curious if they're going to have to find a way to kind of either transform the character to make her leaving make sense for the plot and the audience, mm-hmm. or whether or not they're going to bring another person to take that role. What do you guys think?
Maybe they'll just do it without her, right? I mean, Technical Boy, Mr. World, maybe they don't need maybe they don't need media. But I also feel like, you know, maybe there's like a twist off, right? Maybe there's maybe she broke into 1,000 pieces and there's going to be a social media and, you know, a broadcast media and, you know, whatever. You know, there's lots of different types of medias. So who knows what they're going to do. But
my guess is that they're not going to not find her, because they in this episode they mentioned looking for her. So I think if they were going to avoid media altogether, they would not have mentioned anything about.
Although they couldn't not mention her, right?
Yeah, media is hard to avoid in this day and
age. Yeah, because also it's just kind of like, you know, like the character was iconic. I mean, the character was one of the most. If they didn't mention her at all, they just kind of pretended like she never existed. It's been 2 years since the last season, but at the same time, people are like, wait a minute.
But Mr. World set up basically that he can't.
He can't do this without her.
He can't do this without her. So we're gonna. I think we're gonna see a replacement for Gillian Anderson.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who they get. I mean, it's pretty sad how they couldn't hold on to her. What mm-hmm. a talent, right? You get Scully and you know McShane, and it's sure. like, you know, she also had that. You know, Gillian Anderson as a British American actress. She doesn't actually know her own accent, because she can swap between, she can code shift between her British accent and her American accent so easily, which allows her to take on all those personas that she took on super easily and authentically. So who they can get that can pull that off is key, right? So it'll be interesting to see how they do it.
And maybe that's a thing like every season.
Like Doctor Who, they get a new actor.
Yeah, yeah, right? Exactly.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Okay, so
since Gillian Anderson changed her appearance as media in almost every episode she was in season one, maybe we'll see that continuing. That'll be sort of like the touchstone concept for media moving forward. Right. Is that she's going to
somebody who can do like Archie Bunker, someone who can do like, you know, right. I don't know. Who's good? Martin Lawrence. I'm just thinking like iconic like sitcoms or something.
Quite possible.
Once again, Wednesday reveals his plan. Like, he revealed his plan last season, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's recruiting gods to battle with the other gods, with the new gods. Last season, he said during episode 5, I was recruiting a tired but still vital god of death into war against the new gods, who very rightly fear him as much as they should fear me, but don't, right? So that's even talking about Chernobog or whatever. He's still on that path, and he's got the hammer. He's got Kali. You know, he's got a mad spider and a Nancy. He's got all this stuff. So I think it's pretty interesting to see how he stuck to the message, and he's gotten these people together. The only problem with putting all your eggs in one basket is someone like Vulcan can shoot the basket.
Right, right.
But he's not alone with the aggregation of power, right, Tozen?
Yeah, you know, Mr. World continues to have a lot of power. We talked how Mr. World is kind of all-seeing at the moment. But he also had claimed that he had responsibility for numerous events, as I think, Dwayne, you highlighted earlier in this episode.
In the recap.
So, in the recap. So... yeah, it's just we've got two powerful opposing forces that are potentially coming to a head soon.
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, for the 12 gods that they said we're hanging out with Wednesday, we only see two new gods that seem to be just as powerful because they have the apparatus of the state and media behind them, which gives you an idea of how the world's changed in 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm. So what happened to the idea of the truce or the merger that was mentioned in season one?
Yeah, I mean, I know that media was like, hey, Odin, we can help you find your audience. She wanted to give him North Korea.
Right.
Remember?
Like, right. We had that really whole scene in that sort of that, like,
office built space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the idea is that media said that not everyone has to believe just enough, right? But when you look at this episode, Shadow is saying they should work on building their power and showing the people that they're worth believing in, right?
Yeah.
Saying, hey, look, you should believe in me. I'm Odin, right? Now, Odin gets some ups every day when every week when we say Wednesday. Boom, he gets a little bit of action. But Shadow is saying, just go balls to the wall, people. Explain why you're still here. Explain what you're still doing. Now, Kali, one of the reasons why she might be powerful is because, frankly, Hinduism is a widespread religion, right? Like, it's, you know, something like 1 billion people are still Hindus. But no one's really believing in, like, it's the only majority, it's only like major polytheistic religion left.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, like, you're not going to get like a lot of people. I mean, there are some people that are trying to resurrect the Norse gods in America. That's kind of like a heritage thing. But that's kind of like a fringe thing, right? They're like a fringe group. But, you know, there are a significant amount of Indian or South Asian descended people in the U.S. who still believe in Kali. So I guess Shadow's saying, hey, look, if people can believe in Kali, people can believe in you.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how that all wraps up moving forward from this in this season, like whether that truce or merger maintains or what's going to happen.
Right. I hope to see Kristen Chenoweth again, even though he killed her rabbits.
Right. I think she'll be back. We saw her in the preview for, you know, the previously on. So I have a feeling that in the recap that she'll be back. So let's talk about the changes from the book to the series.
Sure, we meet Kali.
Yeah, and we spend some substantial time at Motel America.
Yeah, I'd say another thing, Mr. World is fleshed out a bit more. He's not really this like hidden character that you only find out more a bit about in the like final act.
Yeah, exactly. He's not really fleshed out at all. I think Crispin Glover's doing a pretty good job of giving us mystery, but actually giving us a character. And then, of course, you know, Argus, we haven't seen any personification yet, but the use of it is a thing, right? This idea that they can use an old god to find old gods is kind of cool.
Yeah, and a big thing is in the book, well, I don't know, should I mention this? Because it's a bit of a spoiler, but I guess it didn't actually happen in the series. but in the gathering after all the gods meet backstage and equivocate on whether or not they're going to go up against the new gods, in that meeting afterwards in the book, Wednesday gets shot by the sniper. And in this series, it's Zaria. So that's a pretty major departure.
Shot and killed.
Yeah. Yeah, Wednesday is shot and killed. And I think he... I don't want to say whether he comes back or not, because, again, that's a spoiler, and I'm trying to avoid any upcoming variations.
But, you know,
variations.
There are gods, and gods can come back. Or
sure.
We don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, so we don't know yet.
But
yeah.
It's interesting that they chose to kill Zaria rather than killing Wednesday, because in the book, it was a pretty substantial point that the murder of Wednesday was a motivator for the old gods deciding to go to war with the new gods, because Wednesday was such an integral figurehead to the old gods. Zaria, not so much.
Yeah. And he was quite a motivator for Shadow too in the books.
Right. Right.
To have his sort of like coming out party, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So pretty interesting changes. I think, you know, part of me is like, well, this will of course extend the story a bit more and keep us enthralled, keep us wondering what will happen. But you know, the same thing can probably be said about a lot of other series. There is that sort of departure in potentially even in season two. I think that might have happened in season two of I was about to say The Force Awakens. No, in season two of The Walking Dead, uh-huh. although I never really went through that full series. I heard there was quite departure there. And
yeah, that's the big turnoff on The Walking Dead. I mean, not turnoff, but like the big turn in The Walking Dead happens in season two. Season one is almost exactly like the book. And then season two, they're just like, okay, it's a show now. Kind of like that happens with The Office, too. So the first four or five episodes of the Office are always the same across like Bulgaria, Britain, the U.S., whatever. And then it goes in whatever direction it needs to go to maintain itself.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So any thoughts about just the sort of the technical aspects, like performances, directing? I think you already know my thoughts about Ricky Whittle. I think he's done better this season than last season. But I think he's still the weak link in overall directing.
They're not
music.
Sparing any expense is what I would say on the production side, right? I mean, Toski mentioned the cinematography. The CGI with the gods being in backstage was pretty impressive. I thought it was a bit much, but you can't deny that it was like, okay, I get it. They're really gods. It's not like they're just people who are crazy about gods or fans of gods. They are the thing, you know? So there is that.
What do you guys hope to see in the season to come now that we've finished the first episode here?
A dragon?
No,
I thought you were going to say, like, White Walkers.
I feel like...
It's, like, wrong series.
Yeah, close. Close, but no cigar. I'll tell you what I still want to see. And I don't know if I should mention this again, because how much we're getting into spoilers from the book, but I still want... There's a major departure in the book where Shadow Moon spends a good deal of time outside of what we've seen so far. And that is the section of the book that I want to see depicted in this show.
Yeah. I was telling you guys, I was talking to you guys before the show about how much I like that section. I read the book a few times and it's like kind of like this snuggly, happy moment.
There's a whole
book for me.
There's a whole subplot involving intrigue and mystery there also. And I feel like that could almost be the entire season. Like, that could be, once we get past a couple episodes this season, that could take up the entire rest of the season before we jump back into sort of the main thread of our narrative.
Yeah, and those are some really interesting characters too. So yeah. That would be cool to see them depicted. But
it's almost a book within a book.
I mean, there are a couple of those, right? So there's that book within a book, then there's some historical side quests that happen as Neil Gaiman tells more and more stories of the gods in America, because American Gods isn't just limited to the United States. It's focused on the United States, especially the Midwest, but he goes kind of all around the Americas for this on some level. So yeah, I mean, maybe they'll get to other parts of the U.S. and maybe he'll be able to, so in the book he explores some of the South and the Midwest a lot. Maybe he'll be able to explore other parts of the U.S. That'll be kind of exciting, but it'd be nice.
All right, so that is going to do it for this episode of The Dominant Paradigm. And make sure to join us next week on the show, where we're going to be talking about the second episode of American Gods, which is entitled The Beguiling Man. I have no idea what that means, but as with every episode that we've seen with the title of it, it becomes very clear. As what Mr. Wednesday described fortunes, they're opaque at first, but at the very end, they become very, what did he say, inevitable? Something like that.
Unless it's Laura Moon's fortune.
Right. Well, maybe it means that for her, too. Maybe it seems opaque, but it's very inevitable for her. She has just no fortune, as Mad Sweeney suggested.
Her eyes are opaque.
Yeah. So that's it for this episode of Dominant Paradigm, and we will see you guys next week.
Everybody walk in this land.